Okay, this week is a parsha where it's not hard to find topics. It's hard to narrow down the topics. There is essentially the whole Torah in this week's parsha, at least as summarized by the Aseret HaDibros. So, quite a lot to choose from, but perhaps one that may occupy a distinct place within the Aseret HaDibros is Akiva Ve'Ein. And that itself is, of course, a huge topic. So one issue to kind of zero in on that, which will connect to the theme of Aseret HaDibros specifically, is the question of what exactly does Kibbutz Ve'Ein ask of us? Does it require that we, for example, listen to any parental instruction, regardless of what it involves and what it connects to? So that's an important question. And it was actually a topic that was debated by the Rishonim. That we know the Gemara says in Kiddushin, Drash, and the Chazal say as well, that the obligation of Kibbutz Ve'Ein is primarily one of service. So there's different formulations of Chazal, essentially saying, Ma'achileihu, Mashkehu, that we should bring food to our parents, we should bring drinks to our parents, Malbisho, bring clothing, etc. And Rishonim comment in Meiri and others that this is not an exhaustive list. It's not meant to say that this is the only things that these are the only things that you do, but it's a way of saying that that which is of service to a parent that benefits them directly, so that is what we are obligated midin kibbutz ve'ein. There are other things also that the Gemara refers to, such as talking in a way that shows that we honor our parents, and may also especially be relevant because the Gemara says that there's kibbutz ve'ein that's applicable even after the parents are no longer alive, b'chapte b'chay. And there it seems, as Achronim spell out, that there's a different type of kibbutz that's relevant to parents who aren't alive, and that's specifically when they're alive, so then it's about service, and when they're not alive anymore, to benefit from the service, it's about doing things that will increase their stature, honor the world, whether it's naming yeshivas after them, saying Kaddish, things like that, give tzedakah, things of that nature. But neither of those categories necessarily includes listening to an instruction, listening to a command that's not about direct personal service. So it was a question among the Rishonim as to whether or not there is such an obligation. And a number of Rishonim, particularly in the beginning of Maseches Yevamos, talk about this, and they seem to suggest, a lot of them, that there is no such chiyuv. And this is concerning a passage in the Gemara where the Gemara tells us that kibbutz ve'ein does not apply if it involves committing an aveira. So, for example, the Gemara says, Yishimo v'aviv tiro v'yeshav tishmoru, that there is an obligation to revere one's parents and also an obligation to keep Shabbos. So Chazal understand that if they were telling you to violate the Shabbos, you should not do it. So the Rishonim, talking about that, they raise the question, well, what exactly is the Havamina? Why do I need to be told that this mitzvah would not involve allowing us or requiring us to be Mechal Shabbos? What exactly is the context that you're assuming that maybe there'll be a conflict because the parents will say, be Mechal Shabbos, and now that's conflict with the Torah that says you should not be Mechal Shabbos. So it's a conflict between Kibbutz Ve'Ein and the mitzvah. There's no such conflict, they explain, because who says that that's included in the mitzvah of Kibbutz Ve'Ein? Kibbutz Ve'Ein doesn't mean just following any instruction. It means serving the parents. So if they're just instructing you to do an aveira, that wouldn't be a mitzvah anyway, even if it wasn't against the aveira. So what exactly is the reason for this? And they have different interpretations. So it comes out from those Rishonim that it does not seem like there is a mitzvah to follow an instruction. If it's not about service for the parent, that wouldn't even have been included in Kibbutz Ve'Ein, and we don't need to be told that that would not override a halacha. So you find that language in a number of Rishonim, Yevamos, and elsewhere. But a notable exception, you may not even note the exception if it wasn't for the Vilna Gaon, but the Rashba has a slightly different formulation. And that slight difference, the Vilna Gaon thought, was very significant. And others then, after him, spent a lot of effort to try to explain it. Because the Rashba says something really very similar, but maybe it's a crucial difference. That when he makes the same point that we wouldn't really have thought that Kippur Av'eim should even have a possibility of overriding Shabbos or other dinim. The language he uses is that to follow a parental instruction is not ikar ha-mitzvah, that it would be docheh lo saseh. This is not the main mitzvah that could have gone head-to-head with some kind of another Torah obligation. So that slight difference in language, the Vilna Gaon and others called attention to, and they said that why is it that he seems to be saying not that there's no mitzvah, but that it's not the main mitzvah, that it's not really what it's about. It's some kind of a tangential mitzvah, it's some kind of a second-level mitzvah, it sounds like. And that that mitzvah, maybe it exists, but it's not fundamental enough that that could have gone head-to-head with another din of the Torah. So how do you understand that? So this led to some significant theorizing in the Achronim, trying to figure out what the Rashba is getting at when he says that maybe there's some kind of secondary mitzvah that would require you listening to a parental command, but that would not have been strong enough to go into competition with other principles of the Torah. And there are many different suggestions, and among them, some note that maybe it's not this mitzvah, maybe it's another mitzvah. That we have, we alluded to a minute ago, that there is actually a parallel mitzvah that appears in Parshas Kedoshim, that there the Torah says, as we just quoted, Ishimo Vaviv Tiro, that one should have reverence for one's parents. So that seems to be a separate but companion mitzvah, even though there are some who suggest it's not really a separate mitzvah, that Kibud and Mor are really two halves of the same idea, they're just expressing it in different ways. But it sounds like this is an additional idea, and it's sometimes understood, for example, that Kibud Av'eim, that refers to the things that we do positively, the actions that we do in honor of a parent. And Mora Av'eim, meaning reverence, so that refers to the things that we don't do, things that we show our respect by abstaining from doing. We don't sit in the parent's seat, we don't call the parent by the first name. These are expressions of Mora Av'eim. So there were some who suggested that even if Kibud Av'eim does not require listening to a command that's not about service, but maybe Mora Av'eim does, and that maybe if one would refuse a parental command, so that's essentially like contradicting them or disrespecting them overtly, and therefore maybe it should be included in this pasuk of Mora. So that was a discussion. There were a number of Achronim who took that position as well. But even if you go that far, so then you have to figure out just what the extent of that would be. So even if you were to say that Mora Av'eim means you shouldn't refuse a parental command, but about some side point, so would that mean always? So for example, it's easy to picture that if a parent says, I want you just to do some minor thing, and you say, no, you're not the boss of me, you can't tell me what to do. So that would seem to be not in the spirit of Mora. That would seem to be disrespectful in an overt way. But what if it wasn't so overt? So what if, for example, the parent says, I'm going away for 2 weeks, and while I'm gone, every day I want you to wear a red shirt. So if that doesn't have any relevance to them, and they're not going to know if you're wearing a red shirt or not, so is that still a violation of Mora, or of the same degree? So that's questionable. And also, what if there's a good reason why you can't do it? So it's one thing if a child is just being defiant and he's saying, no, you're not the boss of me, I don't have to listen to you, when it's something relatively simple. But if it's something that would really create a hardship for the child to do, so then the fact that they're not doing it, maybe that doesn't display a lack of Mora. Maybe there's an easy explanation that shows that it's not driven by a lack of Mora. So there was some debate as to how exactly to relate to this idea, and whether Mora has any relevance, and that was one of a number of explanations that was brought towards this language of the Rashba. So perhaps we could explain the Rashba a little differently. And it goes to the core question of how do you relate to the mitzvah of Kibud Av'eim? What is the mitzvah? How do you categorize it? So there was a discussion that was popularized by the Minchas Chinuch, his comments in Parshas Yisro, where he raises the question, and many did after him as well, that how should we look at Kibud Av V'Em? How do we categorize it? Should we see it as a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveri, which is what it seems like on the surface, it's about how you treat human beings, or should we say, no, it's not a mitzvah ben adam l'chaveru, even though ostensibly it's between people, but rather it is a mitzvah ben adam l'makom. So what would make you think it's a mitzvah ben adam l'makom? That would be less intuitive. So a part of it, as we mentioned at the outset, has to do with the Aseres HaDibros, that there is a notion, which is not a recent idea, you can find this in Rishonim as well, that the Aseres HaDibros are broken down into two tablets signifying the two areas, Ben Adam L'Makom and Ben Adam L'Chaver. So therefore, the first five would be Ben Adam L'Makom, and the last five would be Ben Adam L'Chaver. So if that's the case, so then it's surprising that number five, the last of the first tablet, is Kibud Av V'Em. Why is that there in the Ben Adam L'Makom side? So that prompts the question, together with other things, that you have to try to figure out, indeed, how should you categorize it? So we'll start with the less intuitive one, that if you understand that it's Ben Adam L'Chaveru, that's perhaps not so surprising, doesn't need as much explanation. But why would you see it possibly as a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Makom? So there are those who suggest that maybe it's really about honoring God, that that's really what Kibud Av V'Em is for. But it's hard for us to relate to God directly in order to show Him honor. That's too removed for us. So therefore, instead, we do the next best thing, and we honor His human partners. You know, the Gemara Nida says, Shlosha Shutfin Yesh Ba'Adam, there's three partners, the creation of the person, the man, the woman, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu. So if we can't honor God directly, so then we honor His human partners instead, and that's how we accomplish this idea. So that's a possibility, and a number of Rishonim certainly seem to see it that way. In a Sefer that was written more recently, I saw an interesting mashal to make the point, this was effective, that there was once, parables, that there was once a wealthy philanthropist who decided he's going to try to help out the poor of his town. So he set up a free restaurant. He built a restaurant, and he staffed it, and he supplied it. And anyone who wanted to could come in and get a free meal there. So he did this all anonymously. So after a few months going well, people are using it, and the poor are getting all their meals, and that's all great. But the donor, he starts to wonder, do people appreciate what he's done? And the problem is, it's hard to know if they appreciate it, because no one's going to thank him, because he's anonymous. So if they can't thank him directly, so how's he supposed to find out if they appreciate it? So then he has this idea. He says he'll put a hidden camera in the restaurant. And he'll watch when people come in and they get their meals. How do they treat the waiters? If they're nice to the waiters, so then he'll see that they appreciate what they're getting. It doesn't have to come directly to him. So that's what the Sefer suggested. That's the same kind of thing, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks to see how we treat our parents. And if we treat our parents well, so then it shows that we're appreciative of the gift of life that HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided. And that's enough to make that point. And they suggest along similar lines, that's why the Torah says that the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em is a source of arichas yamim. That's a source for a long life. And that you can understand it's midah keneged midah. Because if one is makir tov, appreciates the fact that he has life in the first place, so then it makes sense, midah keneged midah, he should have more life. And so the idea that arichas yamim is a reward for Kibud Av V'Em is perhaps understandable in that sense. So if we say that it's a Ben Adam L'Makom of some sort, so then perhaps that could explain it. But as we noted, it seems more intuitive to say it is a mitzvah Ben Adam L'Chaveru, that it's something we do to our parents for their sake. And if that's the case, so most assume that it's because there is Hakar Satov. So Hakar Satov to the parents who raised us, so that makes sense, and perhaps that's what the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em is about. But what's important to note is that if you look at the way that's expressed, you actually find two different versions of Hakar Satov being invoked here. And that itself might be relevant. So one idea of Hakar Satov is simple reciprocity. And somebody helps you, you should help them. That makes sense. They gave you something, you should give back. So that is one version of Akar Satov. Our parents raised us. Now when we're old enough, we become Bar Bas Mitzvah, so we're old enough to pay back. So now we help our parents the same way that they helped us when we were young. So that's one version of Akar Satov that is invoked. But there's another idea of Akar Satov that you also find. And that perhaps is a concept that we see alluded to a little bit in the parsha the past 2 weeks, that the notion of Hakar Satov is not just about civility and manners and about reciprocity to people, but quite literally translated, Hakar Satov means the appreciation, the recognition of the good. So essentially, it is a mindset, it's a way of thinking. And the idea being that we have to cultivate that mindset. And if we don't have that mindset, so then nothing's going to make sense. The whole Torah is not going to work. Because if we don't recognize basic good in the world, so then we're not going to be able to access the Torah at all. It's not going to have any meaning for us. And this is something that Rishonim already and the Balei Musar all emphasize, the most fundamental midah necessary is Hakar Satov. So they suggest the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em represents that if you can't have Hakar Satov to the people whom it's most obvious you should have Hakar Satov to, people who presumably under normal circumstances did the most for you, so then you're completely disconnected from Hakar Satov. And that's the crucial midah in order to appreciate God and everything else. So step one to everything is Hakar Satov, and presumably the most basic recipients of Hakar Satov should be the parents who under normal circumstances raised the children and provided so many benefits that it makes sense that there should be Hakar Satov in that direction. So these reasons, which normally grouped as two, we're presenting it as three, so that is invoked in terms of trying to understand, is it a mitzvah ben adam l'makom, because we're honoring God through the parents, or is it a mitzvah ben adam l'chavero, because we have Hakar Satov to our parents, and therefore we are honoring them. So one question is, what difference does it make? So you call it one, you call it the other. Does it really affect anything? So it's a good question. Two of the nafkaminas that are discussed, two of the possible differences, you could argue that neither one is a real difference, but two of the differences, they both involve the same word in two different senses, mechila. So mechila could mean a couple things. So one possible relevance is we talk about mechila for tshuva. If you've done an avera, so then you have to ask for mechila. And the Mishnah says that it depends, that if you've done an avera ben adam l'makom, so then there's the standard tshuva process. If you did an avera ben adam l'chavero, so then that requires asking mechila from the victim. So perhaps one nafkamina would be that if it's a ben adam l'chavero, so then tshuva is going to require asking mechila from the parent, while if it's a ben adam l'makom, so then you don't have a chiyuv. The other suggested nafkamina also involves the word mechila in a different sense, meaning when somebody is mechal on his rights, somebody waives his rights, says, okay, you don't have to do this. So is there a concept of mechila when it comes to kibud av v'em? Can the parent say, it's okay, I don't need this? So it could be suggested that that also depends. That if the purpose of Kibud Av V'Em is for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then it doesn't matter if the parents are mochel, it's not about them, it's about God. But if it's for the sake of the parents, so then there presumably is more room to say that the parents can be mochel and can say we don't need this act of covenant. So those would be two nafkaminas, which are ostensibly connected to this. In truth, it seems like neither one is a real nafkamina. Neither one is going to really make a difference. Because to look to the first one, the question about asking forgiveness, asking mechila. So yes, if it's a ben adam l'chavero and somebody is disrespectful to his parents, then he needs to ask mechila from the parents as the victims of his avera. But even if you say it's a ben adam l'makom, it's really there for God's sake. But still you need to do tshuva, and tshuva also requires some kind of trying to fix the avera. So the process of tshuva will require trying to remedy, trying to fix things. So it's going to require apologizing to the parent either way. So I don't know if that's really enough, nafkamina. If it's for their sake, you have to apologize to them. And if it's for God's sake, you also have to apologize to them. So not sure how much of a nafkamina that is. But the other nafkamina also, I don't know how much of the nafkamina it is, because to say the question of other kind of mechila, for the parent to waive their rights and say it's okay, so is that applicable? So there also, it probably is true the same thing in both cases, because the Gemara actually says explicitly that av shemachal al kvodo, kvodo machal. If the father is mochal and he's covered, so he's allowed to do that. So then it's not expected anymore. You don't have to do that action, whatever the action is. You don't have to do it if the father is mochal and says, I don't need it. So is that a raya brura that it is a mitzvah ben adam machaveru? So not necessarily. Yes, if it's for the sake of the parents, so then the parents of the bailim, they should have the right to say, I'm mochel. But if it's for Kadosh Baruch Hu's sake also, so still the parents might be able to be mochel, should be able to be mochel. We see that they are. But the explanation would be because the concept of mechila here is premised on the notion of zehu kvodo, that the act of kavod is defined by the fact that the parent likes it and wants that. But if the parent says, I'm not interested in this, and I'd feel more respected if you did something else, so then that's how they define kavod. So it's not necessarily that it's because it's only for their sake, but it's because what does and doesn't count as kavod could be defined by what the parents are interested in, and therefore, either way, we have that same din that a parent has the ability to be mochel on their kavod. Now, the truth is, again, the larger concepts does also provoke the question of how much is it kedai for a parent to be mochel on their kavod. It may be only certain things that are indeed subject to personal taste, but something that, for example, is of bizayin to the parents. So that wouldn't be appropriate, even if they said they're not okay with it. Probably that's true about things in the category of mora in general. So it's been pointed out, for example, that they call a parent by a first name, even if the parent is okay with it, still presumably has an impact on the nature of kavod that's directed to Shemayim as well, and for certain basic structures of society, so therefore not everything necessarily works so well with the concept of mechila, but that's itself a discussion. But it's not clear that it really should matter whether you call it a mitzvah ben adam l'makom or mitzvah. That may just be a semantic difference. It doesn't necessarily have much of a practical difference. But,
So is there a criterion by Ben Adam Machavero that it's measured by what the person himself would want?
So for some things, not every day, but maybe in this case it is. We know that the Gemara does say that a father has the right to Yilochom. So presumably that's the explanation.
Or maybe like the story where whatever the person does for their parents, that's what that person's children are expected to do for that person.
As far as the schar or as far as setting the standard?
No, as far as like the chiyuv. In other words, if it's been under machavero, and this is the way you treated my grandfather, then that's the way I have to treat you, because that shows what you're...
Is al pi din or al pi mida keneged mida?
If there's such a criteria by Ben Adam Havero, then
that's how they define it.
Or if it's a subjective thing. So for this particular person, that's what they expect, then that's what they get.
Okay, could be. So taking this whole structure, I think perhaps we could explain what the Rashba was saying. But to go back to his comment when he says that listening to a parental instruction is not the ikur mitzvah that is the main kibud av v'eim that could be docha another ister. I think what he means perhaps is like this, that the main mitzvah of kibud av v'eim is a shibud ben adam l'chaver, that it is a bond that one has to another because of reciprocity. So you benefited me, I have to pay you back and benefit you. So that's primarily what kibud av v'eim is. And there, the truth is, you could have thought that maybe it should be docha other mitzvahs. Because, to give a mashal, that let's say if I borrow money from you, and I owe you the money, and then I say, well, I'm not going to pay you back because I want to use the money to buy svarim, or to give staka, or to do some mitzvah with it. So then, you could say correctly that that's not right, that mitzvah, that money I want to use for a mitzvah, it's not my money, it's your money, and it's committed to you first, and I can't say I'm going to use that for some other mitzvah. So too, if the notion of reciprocity is that I owe my parents because of what they did for me, so then there's a case to be made that maybe that's separate from any other mitzvah obligation, and maybe one might think that, yes, that shibud may override the mitzvah that is in conflict with it. Therefore, the Gemara has to say that, no, it's not the case, that we're still not allowed to do averos in order to fulfill kibud av. But the Havamina is because it's an interpersonal shibud, it's an interpersonal commitment. And maybe the same way, I can't say that I'll steal from you or I'll refuse to pay my loan to you because I want to give tzedakah. So too, maybe this obligation of reciprocity could have preceded other din. But listening to a request, it's not about service, so that doesn't fit into that category. But, says the Rashba, maybe, it's not nothing. Because there's still this notion of hakara satov that requires that you should have a mindset of appreciation for the parents. And if one is going to receive an instruction from a parent, and his response, the way he thinks, is going to be, you're not the boss of me, you can't tell me what to do, so I don't care. So it's hard to square that with a sense of hakara satov, mentality of hakara satov.
Recording here. It could be that that's going to be understood differently when there is this factor of hakara satov as a mindset that is relevant to factor in as well. So if there is something coming up against it, if there is some major reason why you feel that you can't do this command, so then the whole math would come out differently. It wouldn't necessarily be reflective of a lack of hakara satov as a mindset. So this could be relevant, considering some of the questions where things are indeed a little bit more complicated. And just to discuss for a few minutes, so some of the areas where you find this, so perhaps the most common, that certainly does come up, the question of, let's say there's a conflict between a parental command and one's choice of marriage. Let's say somebody wants to marry somebody, and the parent says, no, I don't want you to marry this one, I want you to marry that one. So how about that? Is the child obligated to listen to the parental command not to marry the one that they want to marry? So here, the Maharik is quoted by the Rama, and he says that no, the child does not have to listen, the adult child does not have to listen to the parent, assuming that everything else is equal, it's a proper match otherwise, not a halachic problem. So then under those circumstances, the child does not have to listen to the parent if the parent says marry somebody else. So why is that? So the Marik has three reasons. And that itself is interesting, and that itself should lead to a discussion. Why do you need three reasons? Do you need all three reasons? So what if only two reasons are relevant? What if only one reason is relevant? Because you could tweak the circumstances so that not all three reasons are always going to be relevant. So whether this psak is contingent on all three being applicable is itself a discussion, and that's something to consider. But just to say what the three reasons are, each one is interesting in its own right. So the first reason he gives is that there is a concern that this is a violation of the Torah. That getting married is a mitzvah, and if a parent says, don't marry who you want to marry, so then that is a violation of the Torah. So you might ask, what do you mean it's a violation of the Torah? Presumably, at least in this case, again, you could tweak each case, but in this case, the parent is not saying, don't get married at all. He's saying, don't marry this one, marry that one. So why is that a violation of the Torah? So you're still going to get married, you can marry somebody else. So apparently what the Marik is telling us is that this is also a violation of the Torah, that part of the mitzvah of the Torah is that even if, assuming that no other Isurim or other factors are present, that the mitzvah to get married is to marry the person you think you should be married to. So if the parent's going to say, no, marry somebody else, so then that on some level is a violation of the Torah, which is a fascinating interpretation. The yeshiva is learning Gittin this year. So in the beginning, We talked about the question of, is there ever a mitzvah to divorce? Is there ever an ister to divorce? So the Mishnah LeMelech quotes the idea that he thinks that there are isurim involved in divorce. And to prove the point, he points to a rivash. So if you look at the rivash, it seems like the rivash is actually saying something similar to this, that the tshuva was about kibud av v'aim. And, well, it was tangentially about that, that basically it was about somebody who was in a marriage that was problematic for whatever reason, and he essentially had to give his wife a get, and he wasn't. And the question came up that if the father is going to get involved in telling the son to get divorced, so would that complicate the get? Would that basically be a coerced get? Because the child has no right, has no choice but to obey the parents. So basically, if the parent says get divorced, would you consider that to be a coerced get? So the Rivash says, no, it's not a problem. And in that context, so he says, because you don't listen when the parent tells you to go against the Torah. So that Rivash was quoted as saying essentially that there's an isser of divorce because the parent is apparently telling him to go against the Torah. But I'm not sure if that's what he means. I think in this context, what the Rivash is saying is that actually what he was talking about, it was appropriate to get divorced. It wouldn't be considered an isser. But he was addressing that one question, that if the parent says he should get divorced, so maybe the child has no choice but to listen because the kibud av v'aim, and therefore it's being compelled. So to that, the Rivash is saying, no, it's not true. Everything, not everything is included in the kibud av v'aim. And if a parent says to divorce, so then that's not included in kibud av v'aim. So too, in this case also, it shouldn't be seen as mandatory in a way that complicates the get. And presumably, I assume what he means is similar to what the Marik is saying, that if there isn't any reason to divorce and if the marriage is solid by itself, so then for the parent to say you should get divorced, so then that would be a violation of the Torah. Maybe in a similar sense to what the Marik says, that not to marry the person one thinks is appropriate in the first place is a violation of that din. So too, to get divorced when it's not appropriate or necessary would also be a violation of that. So that was the first factor. The first idea is that it would be somehow a violation of the Torah, so one's not obligated to listen to a parent in that case. The second reason he gives is also a big topic in of itself. Each one of these topics you could spend a long time on. So there is a discussion in the Gemara when the father says, I'm hungry, I want a sandwich. So kibud av v'aim means you have to bring him a sandwich. That we understand. But what if the father says, okay, get me a sandwich from the restaurant across the street? So we know that you have to do it. But what is the context of that? So can the child say that, okay, I'll get you the sandwich, but give me your credit card so that you'll pay for it? Or does he have to also pay for the sandwich himself? So that's a discussion in the Gemara. Do we say that kibud av mishal ben, that the child should have to also pay the expenses towards the service? Or do we say mishalav, that it's the father who pays for it? Yes, the son has to do the physical labor of bringing him the sandwich, but the expenses come from the father's account. And we conclude that kibudav mishalav, that it's the father who pays, unless the father's not able to pay. If the father can't afford, so then the child should pay. And then it's a discussion, is that still a din in kibud av v'aim, and maybe that's a din in staka. If the father can't afford food and the child can, so he's mechuyev al staka to pay for it. So that's a discussion. But assuming the father is capable of paying, so then al pi din, he should be the one to pay, and the child does the physical part of it. So this klal of kibud av mishal av, so the Marik writes a kal v'chomer from that. That if the parent says, don't marry the one you want to marry, marry someone else, so who pays for that, so to speak? Whose expenses do that come out of? So it's a kal v'chomer from, if you say that a child doesn't have to pay out of his pocket for a sandwich, so certainly for him to spend his whole life married to somebody he's not interested in marrying, so you could say, Ein lecha mishal ben gadol mizeh. There's no greater example of somebody spending out of his own pocket in order to do this. So therefore, that would not be included in kibud av v'aim in general. Now that klal really requires its own shiur for an hour, because I think it's sometimes misunderstood that people seem to understand that idea of mishalav as meaning that kibud av aim is the one mitzvah in the Torah that shouldn't cost you a nickel. If there's any expense, so then you don't have to do it. So everything else, lulav and going to yeshiva and buying tefillin, everything else costs money, but kibud av aim is not supposed to cost you a nickel. So there's a story, they say, about a man who was a shtickle alamdin, but only a shtickle, as it's conveyed in the Svarim, who said to Reb Chaim Brisker, he said, we are here in Brisk, and my father lives in Warsaw, and my father wants me to visit him, but the train costs money, and kibud av is mishalav, so I'm assuming I don't have to pay for the train, I don't have to visit him. So Reb Chaim said to him, he said, you're right, that you're not obligated to pay for the train to honor your father, so walk. Walk to Warsaw to honor him. So it's a clever response, but I assume that really the whole question wasn't a question, because the assumption that kibud av aim should cost nothing, I don't know if that's what the Gemara ever meant. The Gemara meant that the expenses for the service, so the expenses should be handled by the father when possible. But it doesn't mean that the things that only the child can do in respect for the parent, he's pater if it ever costs anything, especially when it's something the father wouldn't be able to pay for. So I don't think that's what it ever meant. But here, what the Marik is saying is basically is a kal v'chomer, that if a child isn't obligated to pay out of his pocket for something, so to give up his whole marital happiness and to marry somebody he's not interested in, so that's certainly a much bigger sacrifice than anything he'd have to pay out of pocket. And we wouldn't assume that that would be subject to kibud av aim. And the third reason he has, it goes back to this original discussion, that he says that kibud av aim does not mean that you have to follow an instruction that doesn't relate to the parents. So if the child is being told how to live his life, so that's not included in kibud av aim. So those are the three reasons. And each one is subject to a discussion. Each one could be tweaked. Each one could be argued on. And some point out, for example, the Netziv in his Tshuvas. So he writes that it would be different if it was a bizayon, that if there was a disgrace to the parents in this relationship, so then that would be a different story. And there are other aspects that need to be considered. So first of all, the last point, assuming that it's not relevant to the service of the parents, well, it's not always true. If somebody wants to get married and move around the world, and otherwise he would marry the girl next door and stay here and be able to help the parent, so then it does have a tremendous impact on the service to the parents. So is that still the same? So there's a lot of back and forth about this, a lot of discussion, and the Chazon Ish gets into the issue of Moro also, and he notes as well that especially if you're going to say that it's irrelevant to the parent, but it's really not, because a part of the parental identity is the belief that they know what's best for their child and that they're older and more experienced and invested in the well-being of the child. And to send the message to the parent that they're irrelevant in a question such as this is not necessarily a neutral thing as far as the parent's needs. That's something that has a significant impact as well. So there was actually a lot of back and forth about this, and it would say that when these issues come up, that the way to resolve them is not for either side to say, well, look, I got the Rama and the Marik, so the Lach is like me, and then I got the Chazon Ish, and it's it, the Lach is like me. I don't think that's the recipe for happiness in either case. It's not going to end up in a good situation. And that when these situations come up, so it's worth coming to some kind of a mutual understanding and very possibly involving a wise third party to try to mediate. But point to the Makoros and say, this din, that's din, it's like me, it's like me. It's not really going to be a recipe for anyone to be happy. It's important to know, theoretically, what the bottom line is, or at least what are some of the concepts that are relevant. But Paskin, based on these, and to come to a solution or to come to a plan based on one mark or the other is probably not really going to be the way to go about it. A similar question was mentioned for a minute, but a question with a lot of parallels to it is the question if a child wants to make aliyah and the parent doesn't want. So here, this is own set of literature, and there are Achronim and Rishonim who thought that that's a different story. A child has the right to do that, has an obligation to do that, the parent should do it as well. It's a whole back and forth. But on the surface, there are a lot of the similar issues. A lot of the same kind of points are involved, that it impacts on the child's religious fulfillment. So it's the first category, for sure. The second category, in terms of if the child is being told that they have to live their whole life separate from what they feel is so fundamental, so then that's Michel Ben question again. And also the issue of whether a parent has the authority to tell a child how to live his life. So that's also going to come up in this context. On the other hand, a lot of the counter arguments are also relevant, and especially the service idea. If the parent needs to be taken care of and the child is going to move around the world and not be able to give service to the parent, so then that might also be a big cheshbon. So there are a lot of the same considerations are certainly relevant in that context. And again, probably the same mahalach that point to a mukkar and say, well, I got this din, I got that din, I got the marit, I got Rav Adi Yosef. It's not really going to be the recipe for a happy resolution. But appreciate what the underlying principles are. So that probably is step one. And to go back to the main point, the Rashba that we started with, so that balance is also there, that on the one hand, yes, that the Iker Din of Kibud Av V'Em is really about service to them. But at the same time, we can't be Mesiach Das from the whole concept of the fundamental Hakaras HaTov that's there. And sometimes that'll mean we'll be able to stretch a little further. Sometimes it won't be possible because whatever the parent is asking for is just too much and it's not possible to reconcile that with the basic needs of the child. So there'll be many such cases. But when it's possible and reasonable, so the notion that we want to try to take awareness of this concept of Hakaras HaTov and make that a fundamental midah, and that may influence how we decide some of these things, or at least if not the decision itself, because maybe it is too high of a stakes. But then the question is to compensate and to recognize that, okay, even if we had to decide one way or another, that there's still this presence of the mindset of Hakaras HaTov, and that that will require us to do whatever we can in order to try to acknowledge that, even at the same time as we have to make other decisions. So presumably that is also a valuable lesson. So again, a lot more to say about all of the Aseret HaDibros and everything in Parshas Yisro, and the topic of Kibud Av V'Em, so much more to say. Maybe if there are other occasions, we'll come back to some of the subtopics in Kibud Av V'Em, because it really is quite a bit. But as a general topic, hopefully this gives us a little bit of perspective and framework how to relate to this very crucial mitzvah that indeed is a bridge between the whole concept of the most important fundamentals as relayed by the Aseret HaDibros. So I wish you all a wonderful night. Should be only good things. And we'll see you soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.